From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 681, Teams as an Intranet, with guest Stephanie Donahue. Recorded Monday, February 24th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back one of my favorites today, Stephanie Donahue, who has almost 20 years of experience in the IT sector. And Stephanie is a leader and innovator and a skilled problem solver. She has a passion for technology and innovation that led her to co-found the Pate Group. Stephanie believes that technology can minimize risk and maximize business growth and potential. And she is a recognized member of the SharePoint community, where she speaks, writes, and organizes Office 365 and SharePoint events both locally and nationally. Welcome back, Steph.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm stoked on the subject because, you know, Teams is one of these products that there's folks that really love it and folks that really don't. And, you know, it depends on who you're talking to. I wonder if it's part of it's just the embracing of Office 365 in a big way.
It's embracing Microsoft, which is some, you know, for, I don't know, there's lots of haters out there when it comes to Microsoft, but really, I think it's such a fantastic tool. And I'm so excited to see so many more people embracing it than we've ever seen before. So I think it's a huge, exciting time for those that have been in the space like myself. I think, you know, sometimes we've been around where they've said SharePoint's kind of had a bad rap for a while. So it's a good time to be in the business.
When you're an IT person, you know, there was a time when SharePoint was like a kind of virus, like they were standing up all over the place. You trying to keep control of them. It was really a challenge.
But yeah, popping up under desks, yeah, on servers. Nobody knew where all the SharePoints were.
Yeah. I mean, that's the nice thing about the cloud. At least you get a report each month about who's doing what, essentially. You can't just stand up services without anybody knowing.
Yes. In some ways, it's like every IT person's dream because you can control it.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, there's so much to learn and so much to get your arms around. I think that IT folks are kind of like, whoa, this is a lot. Turn it all off. So got to find a nice balance there.
Well, and I did a show a few weeks back with technical fellow Jeffrey Snover talking about the Office 365 intelligent substrate and just this whole idea that they're starting to really learn how people are working in Office 365 and being able to present and offer information to make them more productive. Office is Office, but this is not about Word, Excel, and PowerPoint anymore. This is about all those other pieces and the fact that it is operating in the cloud and has all that intelligence available.
I think it's great that they can finally kind of watch us, right? There's this idea that Microsoft, oh, it's the perfect Microsoft world. It doesn't work in the real world. Well, now they really know.
Yeah.
And they can really focus on the things that people are using and maybe deprecate some of the things that aren't working or rework them in a way that resonates with the users more. And so the tool it keeps doubling down on being more valuable because you do have that ability to know what's going on and to know how people function day to day. And it really makes the tool better.
Yeah, I can't argue with you there. How, when you're talking to organizations that are just getting in or considering 365, and how do you describe Teams?
So Microsoft Teams is, it's a teamwork tool, and it kind of brings a bunch of different applications together. So SharePoint's still there, it's still in the background, but Teams is kind of an interface, maybe like a fancy front end. You know, you have a storefront and then, you know, it's kind of the business in the back, and that's kind of what Teams is. Mm-hmm. So your file storage is still happening on SharePoint, but Teams brings this interface where you can chat and have your files and have your tasks kind of all in one place. And so it's now becoming really your workplace, where I think a lot of us have kind of lived in Outlook for a really long time.
Yes, for sure.
And there's a lot of bad habits that occur when you work in Outlook all the time. And so this is really your new workplace.
Yeah, using your email as file storage you know, using your email as a chat channel, just sending, you know, short emails back and forth and in near real time. Like, these are all pretty awful things for email.
And I think we talked about that on the last podcast. Kind of taming the hoarders, right?
You were the taming the hoarders person for sure. Yeah. And exactly that, like not abusing Outlook that way or Exchange that way. But the, you know, it's, if you just call it a chat program, I don't think you do Teams a service there. It's more to it.
Not at all. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's just one more thing to check is kind of your initial gut reaction. Right. Why do I need this thing? And I already have a chat tool. And it's really so much bigger than that because mm-hmm. you're really learning how to work in a different way. You're working out loud and you're working in a way that, you know, if you're in one-to-one conversation, it's not the same thing as posting into a team and having a conversation around a document and actually having one version of that document, you know, instead of sending, how many times have you been in an email conversation? The thread is like 15 emails long. There's six different attachments as people are making changes. And then some poor person has to come along and like merge all of those changes together around all the conversations that are happening and all the different versions. It's kind of a nightmare.
Yeah, no kidding.
And very simply, Teams gives you one version of the truth and one conversation platform. And then when you add someone in, they can see the rest of that thread, even if they hadn't participated in it to that point. So really powerful tool, just that one little example, but really working in a different way.
It still strikes me that there are certain personalities that are well suited to sort of organizing information around a project. Like, isn't there some grooming that still should be done when you have all of these long conversations and threads around, say, an outage or something? Like, do you just save it, or is there something you can do to improve it, make it easier for folks to read?
You know, I think that the biggest thing is just that the search capabilities are better. You can kind of get through it. I don't know that we're really changing the fact that you've got this lengthy thread. I mean, I do agree, though, at some point you've got to have people, like, you've got to pick up the phone. Right?
Yeah.
Which Teams also does, by the way, mm-hmm. right? You can actually transition a chat in Teams around a document into a screen share where you can talk on the phone, have a conference with a group of people, and literally transition from, you know, how many times are you back and forth on a conversation and you're just hitting a brick wall with someone, but you jump on the phone and you talk through it, that you can actually get where you need to go. And Teams does that as well, right? So again, kind of helping you with that process, the button's right there. You jump on the phone and you talk through it and you get through it five times faster than you can in a lengthy conversation on text.
On text. Yeah, I'm a big believer in transitioning mediums if you're not making progress in a conversation. I mean, whatever that, you know, sort of increasing the bandwidth. Like, chat is one thing. Email's another thing. Then a phone call. Then a conference call. Then face to face. And of course, the ultimate form of communication with humans, at least, is pizza.
Lunch and learns are huge, right? Yeah. So if you're looking at transitioning to something like Microsoft Teams, we do a lot of lunch and learns where we feed people and train them.
Right.
So yeah, food is huge for bringing people to the table.
Well, and just, you know, fundamentally, humans are hardwired to trust those they break bread with. Like, it's not a bad thing. I coach managers all the time. It's like, if you haven't planned every lunch, you're losing out on opportunity. Like, each of those lunches is an opportunity to reinforce trust within a team, across teams. Like, that's all good stuff. But all forms of communication help.
And you can kind of recreate that, right? If the other thing, you know, you can do in Teams is not just conference call, but video, screen share. And when you actually see someone face to face, it matters.
It makes a
difference.
It allows
you to create a relationship that you can't necessarily have over the phone.
Yeah. We humans are wired. We want expressions. One of the habits I've gotten into lately with remote workers is having coffee with them. I'm going to go get a cup of tea. You'll get the caffeinated beverage of your choice. And let's turn on the video chat and chat. No agenda. Just, it's a coffee break, but, you know, I'm sharing it with someone rather than doing it remotely or only having with someone I can sit with.
You know, what's unfortunate sometimes with a remote team is that you'd love to be able to do that, right? And so having this capability to sit and talk with someone, video chat or whatever, is great because you kind of replaces that water cooler talk or that ability to go grab lunch with your team. And what's interesting is that Teams also has this little functionality where you can do emojis and GIFs, and it shows additional personality that you sometimes pull out of those coffee conversations and sidebar chats and that more casual engagement. And I actually, we ran a proof of concept with a customer, and they said, I had no idea this one team, like, they chat entirely in Giphies and they send memes all day, and that's how they communicate. And they're like, I've learned so much about my team that I didn't know before.
That's really interesting.
Because it's that casual medium, and it allows you to connect. And, you know, for those that are worried, you can lock that stuff down sure. to make sure that it's work appropriate. But to your point, right, it's having coffee. It's having that casual conversation that builds the relationship, which makes a better team.
And it is an interesting balance for me as an IT person who's also on the hook, you know, responsible for dealing with HR issues and harassment, things like that. It's like all of these tools are company tools, and any communication through them is company responsibility. So I still very much care that the conversation is appropriate, but casual conversation doesn't have to be inappropriate. And there's room for that. It makes stronger teams.
Absolutely. And you have all the security features. You can, you know, make sure and monitor these things mm-hmm. if you're worried about that from an IT perspective. So, you know, there's a lot there that you can use to kind of keep an eye on stuff. Just don't lock it down too far. That's all I ask.
Yeah, I do like the idea. You know, you're generally trying to get people to experiment with these tools first. So maybe a little more open at the beginning until you have the problem of overuse or misuse. And you can start dialing in some rules. Like, in some ways, that's a good problem. They used it enough that now we have to make rules, as opposed to they don't use it at all.
That's true. And how many times do we jump from one product to another trying to fix, you know, communication issues and those sorts of things? Like, how do we communicate better as a team? How do we share better? How do we do all these things? And we jump from one product to another, to another. We hear that all the time. Well, we've implemented three things. Why is this going to be any different? And you know, so you do kind of have that fatigue happening within the environment. So it's interesting to see how well accepted Teams is.
And do you see this as the tool that people first open as they sit down, as opposed to, say, Outlook or an intranet site or a SharePoint site? Like, is this the first tool in the morning?
You know, I think the transition is there. I think it's equal now with Outlook is what we're starting to see with those that are using it. But it may be used even more frequently remote than at your desktop, right? When you come in first thing in the morning, you're probably going to launch Outlook first if it's not auto-launching already,
right,
already alongside running of Teams. But what I find when I'm out of the office is that sometimes those push notifications that come to my phone from Microsoft Teams, like I'm actually able to kind of monitor what's going on and engage when I find it to be important. And right. So outside of the office, I'm probably more likely to use Teams than I am Outlook.
Well, and Teams has that specific reference thing where if I reference your account in a conversation, you get buzzed.
Yes. And that's a good thing and a bad thing, right? Mm-hmm. So we do ask, you know, that if you need your downtime, to make sure and set your nighttime hours or evening hours, because right. it's as good as it is bad. If it's distracting, you're home, you want to be with your family, right? Then that's a good time to turn on those extra hours to say, nope, I don't want push notifications during this time.
Yeah.
But if I do want them, and maybe I'm traveling for work and I'm just not at my desk, but I really want to know what's going on, then those push notifications are really fantastic, because I know the groups I'm participating in, I know what's going on, and then I can engage when I feel like I need to.
It strikes me that there's also a learned etiquette here of when should you reference someone's account, and knowing it causes their phone to buzz.
Yes.
That you make sure that it's
well
selected.
I had a conversation about this morning. It's mm-hmm. it's funny, the cultural differences, right? I have an admin who's been in the industry for the better part of the last 30 years, and she had an issue over the weekend. And I came in Monday morning, and she's like, oh, I didn't get this done. I came in after hours. I really wanted to finish it, but I just couldn't because something was, you know, an external third-party system was down. And I was like, why didn't you just ping me? Like, why didn't you, you know, bug me? And she was like, oh, no, I don't, you know, I would never do that. You need your weekend. And I was like, you know, it sometimes, I don't want to say generational, but different groups of people work different ways.
Sure.
And it's interesting how, you know, you do have to watch that barrier. And some people definitely, like her, would have expected no one would bug her on the weekend. And on the flip side, I was okay with it. And so it's that easy to do, but you do also have to respect people's boundaries.
Absolutely. But it helps that the tools make it possible for you to control when you are interrupted. That you can say, no,
sure.
You can't
yeah.
interrupt
yeah.
me here, as opposed to you always could. You know, I think that's that part of that, I think it's the old email culture where it's like, well, you should always be responsible in email. It's like, no, I'm a big believer in being very recognizing that you encourage more of whatever you were responsive to, right? And if you put energy into those things, you're going to get more of them. And I'm the first to admit, it's like, sometimes I get emails where it's like, this looks more like someone's not trying to figure stuff out. I think I'll just put it in the 1 hour wait. You know, because I got a folder that sits for an hour or so. And because after an hour, maybe they'll figure it out on themselves. And that's more useful if they actually improve that skill. I don't want to be the path of least resistance. I don't need to be your Google.
That's right. Yeah. So it's funny because you could do that in Teams too, right? It's like, it may not be on delay necessarily, but mm-hmm. you could just keep an eye on things. A lot of times things and people, they work themselves out while you don't have time to get back to it. And you can always come back to it later if they're stuck. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I think it's a helpful space. And yet at the same time, I think as part of your rollout, you really do want to talk about some of those softer points of using the technology.
Absolutely. And Steph, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. PowerShell is a great admin tool for automating recurring tasks. Wouldn't it be great if you could delegate PowerShell to others in a secure and easy way? ScriptRunner is the leading solution for PowerShell management. You can delegate PowerShell scripts to help desk and end users with the easy-to-use web application. On top of that, ScriptRunner offers you a central place for all your PowerShell scripts, credentials, and activities. Want to learn more about PowerShell scripting? Get your free PowerShell cheat sheet for your office. It shows all important commands and commandlets at a glance. Visit the website at scriptrunner.com/runas and order your free poster today. ScriptRunner, making PowerShell a real solution. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Cavanaugh. That's Stephanie Donahue. We're talking a bit about the role of Teams in the organization. And I think I'm going to call this show Teams as an Intranet.
Oh, boy.
Because it seems, well, if you think about, you know, what do you open first, right? It's what's important in the company today. The intranet page was, you know, that portal page idea was very much that mindset of this is where you should look first as you get to work. It sounds like Teams can do that. Am I crazy?
So we just started getting this question. And I think traditionally, if you look at the Microsoft stack, we've always used SharePoint. You know, SharePoint's your intranet because right. It hosts files and that's yep. where you share news.
And organized and by project Teams, and organized by, you know, roles. Like it makes a lot of sense that SharePoint's in that job.
Absolutely. But, you know, it has gotten a bad rap. It's not always implemented in a way that's maybe easy for the organization to use or understand. And now with Teams being so easy, right? People mm-hmm. are just rolling it out and they love it. We actually had a proof of concept where I asked them, I said, how's it going? And he said, yeah, this group threatened my life if I took it away. So I guess we're good.
That's a sign, very much a sign. I know where you live.
Yeah, it's great. And yet at the same time, it's like, well, let's use it for all the things, right?
Yeah,
so okay. It's one of those things that you just, oh, we'll use it to fix this and we'll use it to fix that. And when you break it down, maybe it's great for what it does. And then maybe we're looking at using it in a way that it wasn't meant to be. And I strongly feel like when I hear, oh, Teams should be our intranet, that's kind of where I go with that conversation. It's like, oh, you know, it's a great collaboration tool. Yes, right. It's amazing for that. But what do we mean when we say intranet? Right.
Yeah.
And traditionally an intranet and the reason SharePoint's been used is because intranets are typically very strong in communications, which Teams does,
yep.
but it's a one to many and it's meant to be more formal, right? We have executives that want to communicate messages and they need to make sure that message is controlled.
Right.
Because, you know, there can be chaos if that message is misunderstood. And so when you're in that scenario, you also want to make sure that it's something that you can control how long the message stays available. And, you know, Teams is really just meant for that ad hoc, let's have a conversation and the thread kind of builds and then a new thread builds. And you really can't control what stays at the top of the list all the time because it's meant for many people to be contributing. And when we look at an intranet, that's really where we go, okay, well, maybe it's just a few contributors, it's very controlled, and it's many viewers. And it's, to me, it's a very different conversation, a very different scenario. And that's really where SharePoint shines. And the two integrate. So that's the good news, right? So when I hear you say Teams is an intranet, I'm like, that really kind of hits to where let's talk about architecture a little bit and let's back up a step and let's talk through what your organization really needs to make sure that the tool fits the need.
I guess the question is, what does Teams abuse look like? Like, when is an organization misusing Teams? What are the signs?
So the internet conversation is the primary one, right? I mean, just to hit a couple points there, think of it as a smaller group conversation. You do have a limitation of 5,000 users per team. And so if you have an extranet scenario that involves many, many external users, sure, or something like that, and you're thinking, oh, I'll just get out of having to pay licensing, you know, that's a scenario where you're probably going, okay, this probably isn't going to work. And the same thing for the intranet. If you have an organization with more than 5,000 users, Teams is never going to work for that scenario. Okay. So when you kind of break it down in the number of people in those teams, then, you know, that's probably a scenario where you need to go SharePoint instead of Teams. Teams is going to be great for functional groups and project management and at a basic level and, you know, being able to collaborate around an idea or a topic or an event. Those are all things Teams does really well. But when you try to make it like one team that does all the things with all the people, that's really where you're going to get yourself into trouble.
It's like you're in reply all hell, effectively.
Yes. At that point. It's like the email thread you can never leave.
Yeah. Can't get out of it.
Because there's just too much going on that's not important to you. That's what's great about Teams is they're focused groups that you're working within. So you're only getting notifications and you're only collaborating with the people that are working on the things that you're also working on. And if you think of things at a very corporate level, that's going to be a lot of day-to-day things, but maybe not your critical day-to-day work.
Now, the other case might be true, where it's just so many groups you don't know which ones to be a part of, or like just sort of a group over proliferation.
I think there's a balance, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't want to have so few groups that what tends to happen if you have too few is that you start creating channels within each group. So each team can have a channel, so a slightly more focused conversation. But then as you start breaking those channels down, then you have to start separating your security groups, right? So then now you need private channels, and that's a whole other thing. So security really drives the size of your team, because if you can have one team and one set of security for that entire team and all the channels within it, that's probably going to be a good starting point for you so that your team's not too big or that it's not too small. And then you end up with, you know, 2,000 teams that you're participating in. And the benefit there too with breaking those teams down is that you can archive them out. You can put retention policies on a team. And right. So if you have those projects and you end up on 2,000, well, maybe you're paring half of those out over time because they're no longer relevant and the project has ended and you don't need it anymore. So a lot of options.
I guess it makes sense to create a group around a particular project. And when that project is done, then just archive the project.
Exactly. So it is okay to break it down to that level. Mm-hmm. But we also need to make sure we're doing the things to kind of get it out of the way once we're done so that we don't end up with too many teams.
Yeah. I love the idea of actually saying this is finished. You know, all so often we have a tough time, I think, culturally, just finishing things and saying, yeah, it's done.
And everyone's afraid to delete things, right? Yeah. It's kind of one of those like, oh, I can't get rid of it. I might need it later. And the challenge there is that you run into liability issues and sure. Your legal team is probably not thrilled that you've literally kept everything for 15 years.
Yeah.
And we do need to kind of get back into the mindset of, okay, maybe we archive it and maybe eventually delete it and maybe can get it out of the way. And we can treat different types of information differently. So if it's something that does need a retention policy and it needs to be around for 7 years, it's not intermingled with the things that, you know, should readily be kind of archived off or deleted.
Do we have mechanisms for that? Can we mark stuff as archive and it stops showing up in the list, but it can still be found if needed?
Yes. And you can archive teams. They can kind of go to the wayside so that you don't have them. You can also favorite teams, right? So you can favorite them. So they're kind of, I think it's called hide show now, but you can keep the ones that you're readily using at the top. And then as you archive things, they're kind of dropping out of the way. Something else that some of our customers are doing, if they're using project-based teams, they have an active hub and an archive hub. So this SharePoint site that sits on the back of the team, they can then kind of attach to an active hub for an active project search. And then when it's done, they say, well, we can't delete it, but it could be on the archive hub so that we know, you know, we have a separate search area for archived projects. And that kind of works for them too. So you kind of have multiple options in how you can handle it.
Yeah, no, it sounds cool. So can individuals say, declare something archived from their perspective? It doesn't affect anyone else, or is it an IT role that does archiving?
Yeah, it's really more of a team owner kind of decision. Okay. And that's what's great about the platform is that we're trying to get all of that control that IT has distributed down in a safe way. Mm-hmm. I like to call it creating the fenced-in backyard, right? So we create the boundaries for everyone, and then we give the site owners the ability to go back in and make some decisions about their own content. It does require a little extra training if you're sure. going to allow people within your organization to create teams. They now become the owner of that team. But then at the same time, you don't have to wait for that IT bottleneck in order to get something done.
Yeah.
So there's a general balance between the policies and the rules, the retention policies and things like that, versus how much control we put in the hands of our end users. And really, I think Teams is doing a great job of balancing those things to make it possible for your power users, your end users, to do a little more than they've been able to do in the past.
And I could see, you know, different team leads are going to have different attitudes and approaches to this too. So for me as an IT person, if I'm giving a team lead responsibility for creating, you know, appropriate groups around these things, I'm probably going to check in with them every 6 months or a year to see what they've archived. And if they haven't archived anything, have a conversation about, you know, are you building up cruft here that's going to make your team less productive?
And you don't even necessarily need a person to do that. There's mm-hmm. some new functionality that'll go out and say, hey, you've not used this in 6 months. And it's just going to automatically ping you and say, hey, we're going to put you on kind of one of these retention policies and get rid of this stuff if you're not actually using it. So you've got some additional functionality nice. Where, again, you don't necessarily even have to rely on IT, but IT's created the policy to make sure that those things are happening. So really cool stuff to help us manage our abundance of content that we have and that sprawl that occurs in the environment.
And especially non-destructive policies. Like if it's just going to archive that thing away so that it's not seen anymore, not necessarily delete it, then if they do need it, like everybody's afraid of losing data. It's just a question of do we still have it?
Yeah, and the archive is kind of the soft spot between the hard deletion and maybe I need it to give right. them some time. Maybe it's a year, maybe it's 2 years where I kind of have that ability to go back to something before it's really gone. So I think people are much more willing to have these kind of policies in place if they have a little extra time before they have to make a decision about sure. it going away.
Yeah, and in some point you do run up against legal requirements for not only retention, but ultimately deletion. Like we are supposed to destroy this now, right? It's outside of scope. It shouldn't be here. I've dealt with that mostly in exchange problems. Retention rules around email are a lot clearer than retention rules around something like chat, but I gotta imagine they're pretty similar.
And it's been a little bit of security by obscurity. If it's hard to find, then it won't come up for, you know, some of these audits that are happening and things right. like that. And what you should keep in mind is Office 365, it has amazing e-discovery tools. And right. so now you're not just searching email anymore. You can search the whole, at least a lot of the environment. You're searching Teams and you're searching SharePoint, you're searching conversations in addition to email. And now that all that stuff can be easily surfaced, you know, it's great from a findability, a usability standpoint for the user. But it's a little scary on the side of the legal teams yes. and those that, you know, have to manage that retention and produce that kind of content when issues come up. And so we definitely need to keep that in mind as well.
Yeah. Now, if search is great, then retention policies need to be figured out. Because if it is in there, it's going to be found.
Absolutely. It's great and it's scary. And, you know, that's the thing. That's what we try to help customers with is like putting your arms around all of it.
Yeah.
Cause it's great that this tool does so many things, right? Hopefully you're using SharePoint for an intranet and you're using Teams for collaboration and you're using Planner to manage your tasks and you're using Stream for video. But IT is looking at all of this and going, oh my gosh, they're actually using it. Now what?
Yeah.
And now so circling policies. Back to get those policies in place are really critical.
But these are good problems. They really are actually good problems in the end. I mean, this balance between what goes to SharePoint, what stays in Teams, like if you had a really powerful conversation or a really good analysis of an issue, like at some point, shouldn't that just be made into a document and moved to SharePoint rather than staying in a team?
So potentially, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so let's take policies and procedures, for example, right?
Right.
It's like the thing everybody has, basically, and you're collaborating around that in Teams, and then that's your draft version of the document. Maybe you're publishing that as a PDF, and maybe that PDF, that final version, is actually what gets pushed over to SharePoint for your intranet, right? Going back to that idea of where's your intranet, SharePoint's great for hosting content that's kind of in that final state. It's no longer being collaborated on, but it needs to be easy to find, highly organized, maybe tagged with metadata. Your SharePoint intranet's going to be the perfect place to push that content that was collaborated on in its final format, put it out in a SharePoint, make it easily findable. That's a great scenario to kind of use the best of both of those products.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I do like the idea that the SharePoint is sort of the final arbiter of truth. This is the state of things. And Teams is the negotiation. It's the ongoing process of learning how we want to work next, what we want to do next, projects that are unfinished, that kind of thing.
Yeah, because Teams is really meant to be, there is no kind of read-only security level for Teams.
Right.
And so if you, again, like a policy example, you need a place where people can go and view content, but not change it. That's why SharePoint's so important, because that is what SharePoint is for. And Teams is really, you have owners and you have members in Teams. And so anytime that you don't want to allow someone to edit what's there and the content that's there, that's when you go to SharePoint. It's a great option.
Sure. Well, plus SharePoint will automatically keep a record of all changes too. So you can change something, but folks are going to know when it was changed and who changed it.
Yeah, your version history now available across the whole environment by default. They made that change, I don't know, maybe a year ago or so. Of course, Teams is based on SharePoint. So your Teams content also has your full version history available there too. So as you're making all those changes and collaborating, if you're a little afraid of co-authoring and what if someone overwrites my stuff, your version history is all there as well.
Always there. Yeah, you can't lose any versions of anything. Yeah. This is a really interesting to think about this change in workflow and how Teams plays into it. I'm enjoying that it seems better. It seems, thinking about our original conversation about taming the hoarders, it seems like a great tool to keep the hoarding under control.
It is. And I think it's a little more logical, right? When you start separating everything out, like the what goes where. When it was just SharePoint, it was a little confusing because it was kind of a publishing tool for news and policies. But yet at the same time, you're like, well, some of our sites, well, how do I convince HR that part of my site is safe for everyone and part of the site is definitely locked down when it all kind of looks the same? Now we have very clear boundaries for people to understand. So HR can have their 401k benefits and healthcare information and all of that published to SharePoint. And then they go to Teams for doing their day-to-day. Maybe there's, employee reviews and things like that that they're working on. That can all stay secured into Teams. And there's a stronger comfort level with what's going where because the interface is different and they understand SharePoint is publishing and Teams is collaboration. And I feel like I understand that very easily.
Yeah, better boundaries. I really appreciate that sentiment. Well, Steph, what a great conversation. I really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for sort of giving us a space for Teams and how we should think about it.
Thanks for having me. It's been a good conversation.
Absolutely. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.